From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. There's a whole lot of fishing going on during the month of February. Hundreds of boats were out fishing. We'll have a rundown on who's fishing where. A new study gives Alaska regulators a better look at what happens when hatchery salmon produce in the wild. Trident Seafood will pay up to $23 million in a settlement with the Environmental Protection Agency. It deals with refrigeration compliance. And finally, king salmon have the name, but they don't rule the ocean. We have a report on king predation and salmon maturity. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960. Or online at alaskaboat.com.
Hundreds of boats of all types are out on the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea targeting pollock, cod, flounders, and other whitefish. Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch has details on who's fishing what around the state.
The Bering Sea snow crab fishery is still ongoing, and openers for their bigger cousin, Baird-eyed tanners, kicked off on February 12th in Southeast. The duration will depend on how the catches go in specific regions for 62 participants, and it's likely to last a few weeks. The tanner harvest should top 1 million pounds. Southeast crabbers also can haul up golden king crab, which has a catch limit of 76,000 pounds. Also in Southeast, a fishery for 7 types of rockfish opened on February 10th. A pollock fishery at Prince William Sound closed on February 13th with a catch topping 6.5 million pounds. A tanner crab fishery will open in the Sound on March 1st. Norton Sound's Red King Crab fishery opens on February 25th. The harvest for that winter fishery is just over 12,000 pounds. Looking ahead, halibut opens on March 15th, followed by herring fisheries.
That was Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries Hatchery Committee is meeting in Anchorage on March 8th. One topic expected to get a lot of discussion is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game study of hatchery salmon. After about 5 years of work, the ADF&G's Hatchery Wild Study is beginning to answer crucial questions. For instance, do hatchery pink salmon produce fewer offspring compared to their wild counterparts? And do they affect the productivity of wild stocks that they spawn with? KBBI's Aaron Bolton has more on the study.
After Prince William Sound hatchery pink salmon were found straying into wild streams far from home, various stakeholders began debating whether hatchery salmon are harming wild stocks. Fish and Game set up a study to answer some questions within that debate, whether pink salmon stocks across Prince William Sound are genetically similar, and to calculate how many hatchery fish stray into wild streams. Fish and Game is also conducting a similar study on chum salmon in Southeast Alaska. The study found that pink salmon stocks in Prince William Sound are genetically similar, and that stray rates can vary from stream to stream depending on proximity to hatcheries, migration patterns, and other factors. Now, Fish and Game scientists are beginning to answer another question.
And the third was to quantify the impact of straying hatchery pink salmon in Prince William Sound and chum salmon in Southeast Alaska on fitness of natural stocks. That's the part that now has the very first set of results.
Fish and Game's Chris Hobbisht is leading the study. And what he's saying here is that Fish and Game is just beginning to see whether there are genetic differences when it comes to how many offspring hatchery and wild pink salmon produce in natural streams. Results for the chum salmon portion of the project have not been released. The study examined 5 wild pink salmon streams in western Prince William Sound. Fish and Game genetically matched hatchery and wild parents with their offspring in order to calculate reproductive success. The first results detail both even and odd year runs from 2013 to 2016 in Hogan Bay.
And so in the even year, we found that the hatchery origin females produced about half as many progeny as the natural origin females.
Habicht notes that the study did not collect enough fish during the first year of fieldwork in 2013 to make the same determination for oddier runs. Habicht adds that the even year results also show that all spawning combinations were present in Hogan Bay.
Some progeny came from natural fish, some came from hatchery crosses, and some progeny came from a hatchery female mated with a natural male or a natural female mated with a hatchery origin male.
That's also noteworthy because fishing game has known for some time that hatchery and wild pinks stray from their natal streams, but it didn't know whether hatchery and wild fish would have success spawning together. While all of this is big news, Habicht says the first set of results may not tell the whole story.
So we're being a little bit cautious about how to interpret one set. And I think that the next step is, of course, to get replication across streams and to get replication across years and to see if the patterns that we're observing in this first set and this first stream are going to be similar to the patterns we see in other streams.
Even if these results are replicated in various streams over time, Habicht notes that this study is not designed to answer why there may be reproductive differences between wild and hatchery pinks. Still, the results from Hogan Bay are likely to make a splash when they're presented to the Alaska Board of Fisheries Hatchery Committee on March 8th in Anchorage. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families.
Trident Seafoods will pay up to $23 million to improve its compliance with the Clean Air Act. That's part of a proposed settlement reached this past week between the Seafood Processing Company and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Justice. KDLG's Izzy Ross has more from Dillingham.
In a statement, the Environmental Protection Agency said that between 2009 and 2016, Trident failed to repair leaking refrigeration appliances, and in more than 250 instances, it did not create adequate servicing and compliance records. The agency also said that at times, Trident used uncertified technicians to work on refrigerant equipment. Trident spokesperson Joe Plesha says the violations were the result of poor organization.
Any sort of leaks that occur on Freon refrigeration systems have to be repaired within a certain period of time. The repairs then have to be logged in. And over the years, we have not done that as diligently as we should have. So we didn't have records, for example, of some of the repairs that were done. We didn't have those sorts of processes in place.
In addition to the $23 million Trident has committed to spend to reduce coolant leaks and improve compliance, the company will pay a $900,000 civil penalty. Plesha says these changes will not affect their processing operations.
A large number of the retrofits are in vessels that are relatively old and needed to be upgraded in any event. So it is a costly process, but the world is moving away from Freon anyway. So it's something that eventually we will have to do.
Three of Trident's pollock catcher processor vessels that operate in the Bering Sea had refrigeration leaks. As part of the settlement, Trident will retrofit or retire appliances on a total of 14 vessels to use a less harmful refrigerant. EPA Public Affairs Specialist Suzanne Skidowski says that Trident was one of several retail and seafood industry companies the EPA requested records from.
In 2015, we were reaching out, in 2015 and 2016, reaching out to these companies knowing that this was a problem for at least some of them and maybe all of them, that they've got aging refrigeration equipment either in their stores for the grocery stores or else out on these fishing and processing vessels and facilities.
According to the EPA, Trident violated the Clean Air Act by failing to promptly repair leaks of the refrigerant R22. That led to refrigerant leaking at high rates for thousands of days, releasing more than 200,000 pounds of the gas into the atmosphere.
Because they emitted over 200,000, and now they're saving 100,000. And so if we're saying 100,000 pounds is, you know, almost 150,000 cars, those emissions were equivalent to, you know, 300,000 cars. That's a lot in 1 year.
To prevent oversights of this magnitude in the future, Plesha says Trident has implemented an environmental management system.
actually, starting back in 2016, we've developed really a comprehensive record-keeping, monitoring program, testing program, as well as proactive measures to make sure that leaks don't occur.
This is the second settlement Trident has reached with the EPA in less than a year. Last March, Trident paid nearly $300,000 for Clean Water Act violations, specifically for discharging more fish waste than was legal. Trident is one of the largest seafood processing companies in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. It has 17 processing plants nationwide. 11 are in Alaska. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans.
And finally, king salmon have been returning younger and in lower numbers than predicted in much of the state, which has biologists wondering what's happening to the kings in the ocean. Johanna Urick at KYUK in Bethel reports on research that seems to indicate that a predator may be involved.
Caitlin Manishin from the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences at the University of Alaska Fairbanks caught everyone's attention at the recent Alaska Marine Science Symposium when she showed data from one of the three-year ocean king salmon her team caught and tagged to better understand what was happening to kings in the midst of the ocean.
My lab put pop-up satellite tags on large immature Chinook salmon outside of Dutch Harbor, Alaska, in both summer and winter months. So these tags record depth, temperature, and light, and we got some pretty unexpected results.
She pointed to a graph generated from data from one fish caught, tagged, and released on December 18th. The data shows a fish swimming up and down in the water with temperatures of 6 degrees Celsius in the Bering Sea and normal changes in light.
Then all of a sudden, on December 27th, the temperature jumps up to a balmy 26 degrees Celsius, and the tag records complete darkness for over 3 days.
The question is, what happened? What could warm the temperatures and turn off the lights? Researchers looked at the temperature. It's much warmer than that of cold-blooded fish, but not as warm as marine mammals.
We concluded that the tag is inside of the stomach of a salmon shark.
The team got the same results from close to half of the fish they released and retrieved tag data from. That's a high percentage in anyone's book. But after Manishin's presentation, other scientists pointed out that these tags are so big, they may make it easier for sharks to capture the king salmon. Furthermore, because sharks can detect electromagnetic signals, her tags may make it easier for sharks to track the kings. That could seriously skew her results.
That is definitely a possibility. It's a large tag on a fish, so it could be a lure.
Caitlin Manishin's not stopping. She plans to look deeper and try to sort out the effects predation combined with earlier salmon maturity may be having on the king salmon run. For KYUK, I'm Johanna Urick.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Izzy Ross at KDLG in Dillingham, Aaron Bolton at KBBI in Homer, Johanna Urick at KYUK in Bethel, and Lainey Welch from Alaska Fish Radio. And for you fishermen, remember, life jackets really do save lives. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.